Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey guys, today's show is brought to you by Heshy Socks. Go get a pair at HeshySocks.com. It's the summer, temperatures are rising, and comfort is king. Whether you're going for a hike or a bike ride, going to the gym, if you're stuck in the office, or just hanging out at home, make sure your feet are as comfortable and as stink-free as possible. That's why you need HeshySocks.com. They are the most comfortable kick-ass fashion socks for work or play. I love them. I've told you guys a million times, but these are the best socks I've ever owned. They've made shoes that I thought were uncomfortable. My feet feel great after wearing them. Yeah, I love that you can wear them with anything. You can wear them with sneakers, with dress shoes, anything in between. I wear them with boots. They offer a variety of colors and styles, ankle, basics, fashion socks, everything to fit your need. Go to HeshySocks.com, and if you enter the promo code PROBLEM30, you're going to get 30% off your entire order. It's an unbelievable product at a great deal. It comes out to like $7 a sock. You won't find this quality at this price anywhere else. So stop buying overpriced socks. Stop buying socks that fall apart after a few washes. Go to HeshySocks.com. Let them know you're with us. You'll thank us. Once again, that promo code is PROBLEM30 for 30% off at HeshySocks.com. All right, let's start the show.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. We are resuming the Wednesday one-on-one segment, and I'm joined this week by one of my favorite people, and one of my favorite people to talk politics with, one of my oldest friends, and that is, of course, from the High Society Radio Show, a returning guest to the show, Snake Dick, everybody.
Yeah,
Snake Dick is here
Snake
with
Dick.
Us. Why does Snake Dick come up when you Google your
name? Because of the comic, Snake Dick, Legend of the Manaconda, that I kickstarted last year. So the Kickstarter account comes out and a bunch of reviews come out for it online.
What happened with that?
I mean, I sold a bunch of them online. And then, you know what it is? What's weird is, you know, if you want to get distribution for comic books, you have to have at least one quarterly book planned for 2 years. And they changed the biggest distributor.
That's
the biggest distributor of comics is Diamond Distributors, and they basically want that because a lot of guys come in. I was like, I'll sell the 1,000 books, no problem. Like, it won't even,
sure. Like,
because we got, like, most of the Kickstarter contributors were podcast fans, and it's not like I went on, like, I didn't even come on this show. This is a bigger show that I, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, trust me, like, I'll sell 1,000 books. Like, just, if we get an order for 1,000, 2,000 books, like, no problem. Like, a bunch of people still hit me up, like, where can I get this book? And I'm just like, there's 5 comic stores in Manhattan that sell it.
And that's the only way to get it?
Well, because I'll just go. Yeah, I mean, I could put it online. I just haven't done it.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted to get the distribution because I want to do other stuff down the road.
Right.
But to have eight comics in the tank is expensive and difficult.
Very time consuming, I'd imagine.
Yeah. I mean, art costs with color and everything, you know, you're paying almost $200 a page if you want something to be delivered on time.
Yeah. And you want it to be quality.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for coming in. Okay. I don't have a lot planned for this episode. I thought we would just talk. But you did, you messaged me. Did you see, what's his name? Joe, fuck, blanking on his last name.
Joe Walsh.
Joe Walsh.
Now that's Morning Joe, right?
No.
Is that who that is?
Morning Joe is Joe Scarborough.
Okay. I don't pay attention that close to this, but I know this guy was a radio pundit.
He's like a conservative radio show host.
He was a rep for Massachusetts?
That might be correct. Okay. I know he was in the Congress. He wrote in on the Tea Party wave. Mm-hmm. And he, to me, represents the worst of the Tea Party wave. But that was a big... The Tea Party was really like a good grassroots movement that got co-opted very quickly and just turned into like the new Republican.
Oh, yeah. It was a good idea.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, isn't there a... I didn't see it, but I believe there's a documentary about how quickly neocon corporate interests... Mm-hmm. Just got a hold.
Start flooding in.
Yeah.
They're experts at this, man.
Yeah.
Like all this shit. It's nice to just think, oh, we'll get some people aware of stuff and we'll have a little movement and we'll bring this whole thing down. But man, they're real crafty when it comes into right away just fucking flooding money in. And then the controlled op is what always really fucks you over is they get somebody who's a leader to you, but is really steering you in all the wrong directions. I wonder sometimes about how conspiratorial all the shit is, because it always seems like that's how things work.
But I don't even think some of that's not even that conspiratorial. Just like get a guy who's kind of high up.
Well, wouldn't you do that? I mean, if you had money and power.
I would totally do that.
It would be stupid to not do it.
Yeah.
So you if you have
that's
something
That's just what
like,
a podcast is.
If you Right. Well, really. That's what we're all doing.
Yeah.
But if you had something like, you know, you got, say, like you're in bed with the military industrial complex and there's someone like Ron Paul out there saying all these things. Wouldn't you want someone who's just constantly preaching small government? But oh, and so we have to protect Israel. We have to fight all these wars. Yeah. You know, you like that guy and just lead with the 5 points that he agrees with Ron Paul in, get a lot of his support over there. And then all of a sudden, you know, switch you into that. And then you have like the left wing people fight him really hard like he's the devil. And then that's the key to the whole thing. Is that you go, I think it was Noam Chomsky who said this once, but he was like, basically, you know, I'll butcher it, but it was something along the lines of like, the way you control a society is you have an ever-shrinking area of allowable opinion, but then you have ferocious debate within that area. Mm. So you really act like they hate each other. Like, I think the top, you know, marginal tax rate should be 39%. I think it should be 36%. What are you, the fucking devil? This guy wants to burn it all to the ground. And then they fight like they're real enemies. But basically, they're getting you to concede that this is the range of where the tax rate can be. Just one example.
Because you have to agree with one of the... This is why I always... And I think it's pushed a lot more people towards conservatism is because there's so much on the left, just in general. It's definitely done it with me of like... If you agree with anything this person says, you're the devil.
Yeah.
Like I've had people like just in online arguments be like, oh yeah, if you agree with anything that the Republicans say, you're morally bankrupt. It's like, all right, well, I mean, at the very least, I'm holding on to the Second Amendment. So, where are we? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
no, it's very effective in that sense of pushing all of us to the... You know, we got a lot of that when we had Louis C.K. at Skankfest. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, look at Louis now. He's, you know, all these people were furious. They're like, oh, now he just caters to like these right-wing fucking... Blah, which, you know, I've talked about before on the show. The idea that
wasn't
Skanks
he there because
right-wing.
Joe List brought him there?
Yeah, that's it. And also because we're the group of people who aren't trying to ruin your life over a fucking mistake. You know, it's like all like we're the group. It's not like that.
Well, it was a series of mistakes, but still.
Yeah, only like one or two of them were actually mistakes. The rest were just a good time.
Yeah,
but
it was really just the phone one.
The phone one and the one at work. The one at work was bad.
But he didn't actually jerk off in front of the girl at work.
Yeah, but still, you can't. That even though he didn't actually jerk off in front of that girl, of all the stories I heard, I think that was the worst one.
Mm.
Where like he just goes up to some chick at work and was like, "Hey, will you watch me jerk off?" And she was like, "No," and he was like, "Okay, I'm sorry."
All right, can you just watch the door so nobody walks in?
But you're just like, but that itself is just so awkward. You're like, dude, you can't ask people at work if you could just jerk off in front of them. That's
I mean,
that's
I
an
only
aggressive
work
way
here.
To do it. Yeah,
and you could definitely
okay
ask
here
people,
you here you're at, it's actually frowned upon to never ask.
Yeah.
We've been like, Chris has been with us for a couple years now. He's never tried to jerk off in front of anyone.
It's very weird.
You could get fired or at least demoted for trying some creepy shit here at Gas Digital. But it's like that, you know, it's weird because even if you just, I mean, if you ask somebody out at work, like, I don't know if that's even considered okay.
Well, I remember my girlfriend was upset about the whole Louis C.K. thing. And I was like, but if he walked up to those girls and was like, hey, you want to fuck? And they said yes, it would have all been fine. And she was like, kind of. And I was like.
But isn't the problem with saying, hey, do you want to fuck, that it's just too straightforward and crass? Because if you just said like, hey, can we grab dinner tonight? Yeah. I don't think. I don't know. I'm out of touch. But maybe there are some Me Too people who'd be like, no, that's still. But if you just said, hey, I'd love to take you out to dinner. I think a lot of people would be okay with that. But what are you really asking? If you're asking someone out to dinner, I mean, what you're asking is like, is there a possibility of us fucking?
Yeah,
like,
do you want to fuck with extra steps?
Yeah. Like, no, I'm not a dick. Like, I'll put some food in you first. Yeah. But ultimately, I'm trying to fuck you. Maybe not even tonight, but. Maybe a few dinners and then
hopefully
I'll fuck.
Tonight.
Obviously, I'm hoping tonight. This is a decent restaurant we're going to. Yeah. But like, but really, that's all it is. Mm-hmm. That great old Chris Rock bit where he goes, women are great at turning down dick because everyone's been offering you dick your entire life.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Take it.
No, I can't. I apologize. Yeah.
Bronx Johnny needs to get a hold of you.
Yeah. No, he's still in Ecuador.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he's back in Ecuador with his child bride.
What the hell's going on with that guy?
He works for the Board of Ed, which is the weirdest part of the whole thing. And
one of our heroes.
Yeah. But no, he works for the Board of Ed, and so whenever he has the summers off, so he's basically been down in Ecuador. He had to come back for a few weeks to do some stuff for summer school, and then he went back.
And he's got a child bride. Now when you say that, it sounds worse than it is.
She's 22.
She's an adult young bride.
Yeah, she's a very young bride. Yes.
That's a weird man, age of consent laws really are weird. Where like you'll you have to set a standard somewhere.
Sure.
It's just kind of arbitrary. And then it's weird how like there'd be, you know, there's I don't know why I brought this example up before, but I don't mean to be like taking shots at him, but Dane Cook is like in his 40s and I think his girlfriend's 20 and they've been together for 2 years. I might be a little off on those numbers, but it's something like that. Like I think he started fucking her when she was 18. And so he's like 40. And she's 18. And everyone, you know, people might be like, ah, it's a little creepy or it's a little weird. But if he was 40 and she was 17, or if he was 39 and she was 17, everyone would be like, you should be in jail. It just seems so weird.
If it's like, like 6 months. So you're not even really a year. It's like a couple months.
And you're saying if a 25-year-old is fucking a 16-year-old versus a 40-year-old fucking an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
You're telling me one of them should go to jail, and the other one, it's just kind of like, having fun. That's very strange. Yeah. Very strange that we have to pick this weird little area and then like make it black and white. By the way, I'm all, don't take this the wrong way.
Or
age of consent laws.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure like just laws have to be black and white, because if you allow a gradient, then you're opening it up for the woman. The man can say that the girl was more mature, but what is that really based on?
Oh, yeah. No, you can't let people fuck kids. No. I agree with you completely. It's just a strange
I mean, if they
world.
Have a plane, whatever. But
come on.
Obviously, a plane.
They have a plane, maybe a DA in their pocket or two. It'll work out for a while. But as we've seen, even that doesn't work out so well.
Yeah.
You patented that quick. I feel bad. I've been working on this for
had a beer in a couple days.
15 minutes. Oh, good for you.
Well, you're drinking Brooklyn Lager. That's a slow sipping beer. This is Heineken.
It's true. It's an East IPA as well. So this is the one of the heavier Brooklyn Lagers. But it is a strange. No, it's not. I guess you're right. The law does have to be black and white. I mean, theoretically, you could make the law about what the guy's age is too. I guess what's weird to me was I saw him. I think he was on Fallon or Kimmel, and just talking about his relationship, and they're all kind of joking around about
Seinfeld,
it.
Seinfeld was what, 46 with a 17-year-old?
Seinfeld dated a real young chick.
She was 17, and she was
very young.
You know what it is? For whatever reason, I thought of it recently, and I looked it up. She's still pretty good looking for an older woman, because this is like 20 years ago.
That's not his wife, right? I think it was the chick before his wife.
Yeah, and she was like, I think she's married to like a different famous person, I believe. But she was like you'd be like, I'm not going to not do that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you'd be like, I see why, like,
Seinfeld wasn't married. He was young. He was in his fucking prime. He was just kicking ass.
Look, if you're just
what's
out,
the deal with this? What's the deal with that?
It's not like he's not. But
what's
it's not
the
like
deal with Young Puss.
Yeah, it was like 6 years into Seinfeld. I think you know what I mean. Yeah. It was a sixth season. He was making like I think at the time he was the highest paid television star
killing
in the world.
It.
Yeah, I mean if you just meet somebody and you want to fuck them and it's legal.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess there does. Well, look, there's a little bit different of like your own moral stand versus what the law tells
but it's
you
not,
can do.
Let me break this down, though, Dave. It's not a moral stand. It's just a matter of how much you want to fuck that person versus how much you want to like deal with what they're saying. Like, because I don't think if you brought a 21-year-old girl in here right now, I think that's a little young for both of us.
Sure.
How hot does she have to be to put up with the things a 21-year-old girl says for like the length of a dinner? You know what I mean? Like, she's got to be like so ridiculously hot for a 21-year-old for me to be able to not like stomach the 2-hour conversation that leads to asking to go to dinner, to then have a 4-hour dinner or 3-hour dinner, to then bring her back to your house in a cab for 45 minutes, to then like.
You know, I wonder what I've wondered a lot about, and I've talked to my wife about this several times. But I basically got
hiring a 21-year-old
hiring a 20-year-old nanny, and then just say, "Hey, baby, take off for a little while."
Yeah.
No, but I was one like I started. Me and Lauren got really serious, like right before the whole Me Too thing happened, and then so I've just been in a relationship this whole time. I haven't been out.
Yeah,
in the
me
game.
Too.
And you, yeah, you. Well, you've been in a relationship for
longer.
Years. Yeah. How long have you and your girl been together?
6-7 years.
Yeah, so you guys have been for a while. But I really do wonder what it's like to be single in the post Me Too world.
Well,
where it's not just saying not everyone's big enough that there's going to be a New York Times article written about you. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't that always be in your mind? That it's like, wouldn't that just fuck with your ability to talk to a chick?
So
like the thought that in her mind, this is creepy or this is
or
like.
Or what could it be? I mean, I always had that like a little bit of that when I was growing up. But I have a buddy who's 22, friend. And he's like, he just graduated law school and he is in the same, he's in that boat where he's like, I ask for affirmative consent. He's like, and he's like still, he's been fucking since high school. And he's like, I remember kind of not having to. And
now,
I really.
Affirmative consent. So this means every step of the way.
Like, he's like, can I kiss you? Like, he's like the first time.
Can
you know
I kiss
what I mean?
You?
But he's also
but then
like,
you also have to go, can I touch your boob? Can
no,
I
fucking no, grab? No, not
because
like,
that's just insane.
You know, as it goes, like, is this okay? It's more like, can I do this? But like, you kind of do it and go, is this okay? That's what he does, which I guess is not technically affirmative consent. Really glad I didn't say his name in the beginning there. But it's an interesting thing. I don't know that I could do it because I used to just pull my cock out once I was like, if you're making out for a while,
we still call that a BK Chris.
Yeah, that's
you just pull your dick out.
Yeah.
You know, I went home with this chick last night. Nothing happened. You try a BK Chris?
Yeah. Because something will happen. Something's going to happen.
Good or bad. Something's
happening. So here's the thing is like, I don't know. Once it was just like, you know, you want to put that away? I think that happened one time. And I was like, okay. And you just go back to doing what you do.
Put that away?
Yeah, you want to put that
just
away?
Talk about it like it's a book left on the coffee table?
Yeah.
Hey,
well, it's not like I pulled it out unprompted.
Before we go to bed?
Like in that episode of Seinfeld. I didn't pull it out unprompted
of course,
while saying
yeah,
goodnight.
Yeah.
It was like you're making out for a while, and it's like, well, how long are we going to do this? Like, you know what I mean? 20 minutes? 25? Then it's like you put your hand on the dick. Well, now she's rubbing the dick over the pants. You're rubbing the pussy. And it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, that seems to be, in my world, a nonverbal cue.
Yeah.
That something could be happening.
Yeah, so it's just like, well, I mean, let me move this along. Because... what the fuck are we doing?
All right, guys, let's take a quick second and tell you about our sponsor for today's show, which is Blinkist. I know for you guys, it's true for me, it's hard to find time to sit down and read when you want to so you can learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read, you can't work on personal development. Now there's an incredible app that solves that problem. I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is incredibly unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser, anywhere you get internet. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down into 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of books quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 8 million people are using Blinkist right now. It has a massive and always growing library from self-help books, books on business, health, history, books on economics. Blinkist has the latest titles from the bestsellers list, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had the time to. I love Blinkist. I think it's an incredible product. It's a great idea. I can't believe they're the first ones to do this. And right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/problem and you can start your 7-day free trial. That's 7 days of unlimited free access to read and listen to Blinkist's massive library of books. That's Blinkist.com, Blinkist.com/problem. Go start your 7-day free trial, Blinkist.com/problem. Let's get back into the show. I was so disappointed in Aziz's apology at the beginning of his last special.
He apologized?
I only watched like the first 15 minutes of it.
But he probably did that because he didn't want to get the old Louis. Well, he didn't even.
Well, he's trying to get back into good graces, I guess, of the Kingmakers. But there's something like of anyone who didn't have to apologize, this bitch said he didn't pick up on her nonverbal cues. And by her own accounting of the story, they went back to his place, mm-hmm. Which, by the way, is a nonverbal cue right there. Mm-hmm. They got naked.
Well, no, it's a verbal cue.
Well, I suppose. But even if you never said anything, it could be a nonverbal cue. They got naked and started both going down on each other.
They were in the car. She was just Jimmy in the door the whole time, but she didn't say anything.
That would be a nonverbal cue.
Nonverbal cue.
But they got naked. They both went down on each other. And then he tried to fuck her. And she's like, he didn't pick up on my nonverbal cues. And you're like, what? I think he did pick up on your nonverbal cues. I think that's the whole story. And also, he just never should have been humiliated like that. And anyway, the whole thing was brutal.
Dude, if you look at, I may have said it on here, but if you look at, that article came out 20 minutes after he won a Golden Globe. It's a couple of thousand words. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, clearly it was just in the bank and they were waiting to see if he won the Golden Globe. And then they just hit send. It was a small blog site.
Yeah.
I would bet that domain name.
It was babe.com or something like that?
Yeah, it was like babe.com or some small. And like, I would bet money that website was sold within 6 months because the value of the website just went up.
Well, whether it was sold or not, the value of the website went up dramatically. I mean, I was able to remember the title, assuming I am remembering it correctly.
I think that was it.
No way I would know who the fuck those people were if it weren't for that story. So that's got to be true for a lot
of people.
What's
weird is a Babe Ruth memorabilia site.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with feminism.
Nothing to do with it. That was in their blog section. They were just trying to increase SEO. It's fucking weird.
It's a weird, I don't know. I watched about 15 minutes of the special and it just turned me off. It's Aziz doing a lot of, and I think a lot of people actually were giving him credit because he was doing kind of like anti-social justice warrior jokes. But to me, it was just making fun of white people for being social justice warriors, which, you know, I guess fine, but he just kept doing what I couldn't get past. Like, I paused a few different times and then tried to watch again and just ended up quitting on it. Mm-hmm. I don't watch that many comedy specials these days. But he's doing, like, a white guy voice. Mm-hmm. You know, like, doing the, oh, and then I said, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, what black comics do, the white guy voice. But Aziz is already doing a voice. Like, Aziz does a black guy voice in his comedy.
Yeah.
You know that's not how Aziz normally speaks. Like, if you met Aziz off, you know he doesn't go like, hey, I'm over here, what's up with this? Like, that's not you. And then you're doing a white guy voice, and it's like this weird thing.
It's double cultural appropriation,
yes.
And both of black people.
And I can't get past it. I've seen a lot of this before with Indian comedians who I've known. I'm not going to name names because I just don't want to. But Omar. No, not Omar. But a lot of Indian comedians who I've known who if you talk to them in life, they speak, I don't know how else to say it, like a white guy. That's how they are. But they go on stage.
Especially if they're from India.
And go, yes, but they get on stage and they go right into, and a lot of these are first generation, so they don't speak with like an Indian accent. They speak like me or you.
Indians from India speak with like almost a British accent because that's the English they learn.
Sure. But then they get on stage and do a fucking like black caricature thing. Like they get on stage and it's very like hip hoppy and this and that. And then they'll speak in a white accent to be the white guy. And you're like, this is actually closer to how you actually sound. Mm-hmm. And I can't get past it. It drives me fucking crazy. It's just riddled with phoniness. Oh, I will say I haven't finished it yet, but I watched like the first half of Chappelle's New Hour, which is really fucking good.
Yeah, I haven't watched
really
that.
Really good.
It came out
really
this week, right?
It just came out a few days ago.
Yeah, I gotta watch it.
Really good. I recommend it. Go check it out. I'm excited to finish that. I didn't finish that one out of anything other than my baby woke up and started crying and had to stop. But I'll finish
how
tonight.
He is just like, I'm going to say whatever I want and not respond to any of you.
It was great.
Until the next special comes out and then you'll have the response.
It's great. He, and it's something that like, I feel like as a comedian, as somebody who's been doing this a long time, and Chappelle's a guy who I think is one of the all-time greats, if not the greatest ever. And it's somebody who I've like, you know, loved his work from before I started comedy. Mm. And it's just nice to see him doing, like, I don't ask for that much. It's just like, be hilarious and be ballsy.
And
that's
yourself.
But that is himself.
You know,
and I know, like, you can see where a lot of these guys today, they have a lot of pressure on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy for a lot of us to sit back and go, dude, just don't fucking compromise. But
there's a lot of money.
There's a lot of money, and there's a lot, and not even just the money, because he's got money. But it's like, me or you may have to deal with some people
tweeting
at us.
Like younger, like a guy like like whatever, Hasan Minhaj or something. Like I don't know Hasan Minhaj.
Well, he's there because he's that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, I'm saying like all these guys where you like don't compromise. Like it's just like it's a lot of money.
Well, those guys have made a lot of money off it, but guys like Chappelle are more like what you're gonna have to deal with isn't like in the realm. Like we're social creatures, and to have the New York Times writing pieces about how fucking horrible you are is a lot of pressure. A lot of people, I'd say the vast majority of people, will just avoid that. That's how human beings operate.
But I think Chappelle also, like, he gave up that fat chunk of money because he thought, he didn't like the way it was going.
Yeah.
And he gave up that money because he started...
Left Hollywood,
started to feel
farm.
Like he was cooning. So, like, he literally, that's why he left. It was $50 million, right? It was, like, some insane amount of money.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I feel like now they're just like, well, you can't say that about trans people. He's like, I already did my part. You know what I mean? I gave up $50 million in the name of social justice. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't, you're going to really, and that's what they all leave out of these articles, is that Dave Chappelle thought he compromised his integrity and people were using the things he was saying to add to racism, and he gave up $50 million fucking dollars.
Yeah.
And what, he just wants to make fun of trannies? That's fine.
Yeah, of course.
Like,
but that's your opinion, and that's a you know, I agree with it. There's something funny. One of the reasons I think it's like I enjoy having these conversations with you, particularly, is that you're like me and you were friends, you know, way before any of this shit, way before podcasting and comedy and all this. We were friends as teenagers, and there's something about the fact that we both see the world in a very similar way, like both politically and socially in a lot of ways like that. And I wonder sometimes, I'm like, oh, it's just interesting, like the way our brains work, that we both kind of, you know what I mean? Like grew up in the same time, saw the same things, and both largely came to similar conclusions about it.
True.
And I wonder, it's also interesting to me that you're one of my friends who, like my oldest friends, who really believes in like the free market and stuff like that. And you were always one of the hardest working people that I knew. You were always a hustler, in the best sense of the word, that of my friends. And it's just interesting that it's like, yeah, of course, to us, you go, yeah, he's making fun of transgender people, trannies, whatever you, it's like, of course. Why would that be off limits? Why would anything be off limits that's so fundamentally hilarious? There's so much comedy in it.
Yeah. It's the entire... The thought process of it, like, it's just like, even if you want to break it down into the most basic level, the idea that a man doesn't like his dick is so foreign that it's like, how do you not explore that comedically?
Yeah.
Like, that's your favorite thing, is your dick. Like, I like my dick more than I like any pussy.
Or the rest,
you know,
of me.
Like,
more than anything.
Yeah.
More than my hands.
Yeah.
More than my eyes.
Yeah, you have a kid now, so maybe it's a little different.
No, it's even more so. My dick makes life.
That's true.
You know how proud I am of my dick?
That's true. It did a good job. You know?
I think brought a human into the world. It's magic. It's fucking, it's incredible. It's the best thing all of us have.
And then you want to just rip that off.
Yeah.
And then put other people's dicks, which I don't enjoy, inside of whatever's left.
Yeah, you're so foreign from me and my understanding of what is reality. Like, if I had if no one had ever done it and you explained that, I would just say, well, no one would ever do that. You'd have to have someone's family kidnapped.
Yeah, imagine trying to explain that to somebody from like a parallel universe where that didn't exist. Everything else is the same.
So, by the way, 1995.
Yeah.
That's from that universe.
No, 1995, the first sex change operation happened in like Germany in like the 70s.
Yeah, Germany, where all the good ideas come from.
I mean, as far as cabaret goes.
No, that's true.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, imagine just like, it's never been a thing. Drag queens don't exist. Cross-dressing, but everything else is the same, except those guys are now dudes, you know, are actually dudes. There's just people who, like, there's something different about their brain, because we can't say it's wrong. That seems kind of wrong. I don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's something different about their brain, so they want to be the other thing. They would just be like, is it like AIDS or something? Do you get it from AIDS? Like,
No. It's just a feeling.
Yeah.
You just feel that way. You're in the mood.
It's just like gay dudes who just really like tits? No. It's not gay dudes who really like tits. It's like just, and people like fucking them who are supposedly straight.
What I love about Chappelle's special, and I, like I said, I haven't finished it, but he's got a lot of jokes in there on this subject. And I love that it's kind of like, because to me, the essence of being a comedian, being a real comedian, a stand-up that is that if somebody goes, listen, you can joke about these 9 things, but this 10th thing that you think is really hilarious, you're not allowed to joke about that. You can't joke about this 10th thing, but these 9 things are fine. You won't get in trouble at all for joking about that. The essence of a real comedian is to go, well, then I've got 5 new things on that 10th thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's my next special, is I'm going to heavily focus on that 10th thing. Just because you're telling me I can't talk about that means I need to. And I can't exactly articulate why that is. But
what
there's some reason where
taboo,
it's like,
is always, there's something about, right? Just in general.
It's not just that taboo is funny, or taboo is something you want to play with. It's the fact that the art of stand-up comedy is that you don't control what I'm going to say right now.
Yeah.
That's like the freedom.
Because laughter comes from uncomfortability. You know what I mean? Like, it starts, like, that's,
well,
all,
that's true, for sure.
You know, it's like, I've said, but like, there's a Gilbert Gottfried joke that might have just been a street joke that he tells, where he's just like, how do you make a faggot fuck a woman? You fill her cunt with shit. I've told that at 2 funerals to women grieving their fathers. And both times it has gotten a laugh. You know what I mean? Like, it's, and that's the least appropriate place to do this.
And then you got to follow that joke with, seriously, your dad was a great guy.
Yeah. He told
seriously,
me that.
I really.
He wrote that joke. So,
my deepest condolences. Yeah. But by the way, use that shit-covered pussy thing as much as you want.
Yeah,
to.
Yeah. Just throw it out there.
All right.
That's how I got him to fuck your mom. He was a fucking homo.
All right, guys. Let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Monday.com. Monday.com is a team management tool we've just started using here at Gas Digital. Everybody at Gas has told me this is incredible. They're really thrilled with the product. Monday.com has been a lifesaver for us. It's completely changed how we track projects. We make sure we're getting stuff done. Instead of emails, spreadsheets, random audio files, whiteboards with to-do lists, and random post-it notes, Monday.com organizes and tracks everything in one place. Monday.com is intuitive. It took us no time at all to get set up. It's flexible, can easily customize with your workflow. It's easy to get organized and find files. Everybody's accountable. What's more annoying than asking someone to do something and never getting a response? Are they working on it? Do they never get the email? How often important tasks get lost in the shuffle is immeasurable. With Monday.com, you can easily assign tasks to people and track their progress. The platform is suitable for any size team, from 2 freelancers working together to thousands collaborating around the globe. We love Monday.com here at Gas Digital. I think your business could benefit from it a lot. That's why I'm recommending Monday.com. And if you go to Monday.com/problem, They're going to give you a free 14-day trial. There's no commitment. So check out the service. See if it works for you as well as it's worked for the Gas Digital team. So monday.com/problem. You get a free 14-day trial. And make sure you use that exact link, because if you're using my link, there will be additional savings in it for you if you do choose to sign up. So monday.com/problem. All right, let's get back into the show.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of politics.
Well, we didn't finish the Joe Walsh thing.
Well, no, we didn't even start the Joe Walsh thing. So Joe Walsh was on, he was interviewed by CBS the other day. You told me about this. I had missed
PBS.
I'm sorry, PBS. My apologies. And you told me about this, and I went and I watched it online. And I knew, I had heard that he was running against Donald Trump. To me, and this is where I was going before when I said the Tea Party being co-opted thing, this seems like a weird, not saying he's controlled opposition, but it sure smells like it. When you have somebody who they go, let's primary the incumbent president who's...
When was the last time that happened?
From within his own party? You know, I'm not sure, man, but you got to go back. I don't think it's happened in my lifetime. Definitely didn't happen to Obama. Definitely didn't happen to W. Definitely didn't happen to Clinton.
Or Reagan.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
I don't think it happened to Carter.
Yeah. I mean, Carter was a one-term president, so... Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe. I'm not sure about Carter. But there were people who challenged them. Like, Pat Buchanan ran, I think, in 96.
Well, I mean, Ross Perot
But it wasn't in the Republican Party.
Yeah. And well, Ross Perot was an independent. Yeah, he was a Republican before he was an independent, but he didn't run.
So, I guess you could technically, you could kind of break that down. But the idea of running within the party apparatus against the party, against the incumbent president, who is still very popular within the Republicans. Mm. I mean, he may only have like a 45% approval rating in the general public, but he's got to be at least in the high 80s within Republicans. It's very strange. And then to get it as a guy who is kind of fills a similar lane to what Trump fills.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's like, well, we could just shave off a couple points here, shave off a couple points there. It just seems that way to me. I remember Ron Paul got primaried right after the Tea Party movement. It might have been 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Some Tea Party guys started primarying him. And I was like, well, why the hell would anybody in the Tea Party be trying to run against the most small government? I mean, look, your warfare state is going to continue whether Ron Paul's there or not. We got one vote against it in the whole Congress. Why would you want to get rid of the smallest government guy?
The guy who kind of started.
Yes. So it seemed, so it always smelled that way to me. But the interview, I do recommend you guys go watch it. It was really, really funny. And I got to say, I was, as they started and he's going through his whole thing about how, you know, Trump is unfit to be president, and this is why he's speaking out against him. And I was just waiting. I'm like, look, there is nobody who's a conservative Republican who says Trump is unfit to be president, who isn't, and I've just, look, prove me wrong if you will, but this has been proven right every single time it's come up.
Turns out Joe Walsh wrote the California raisins. He's done
right.
for.
he is that guy. Yeah. But every single time they have a problem with Trump and they're like, well, he's just unfit and blah, 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 and he's a disgrace to the office, blah. It's like, get to your point where the problem is that he's not willing to fight every single war. Get to it. And it's about it's a few minutes in before he finally goes, and the moment that I turned on him was in Helsinki.
Yeah.
When he betrayed his own people. And he actually says the words, which I think this is so revealing. This is my favorite thing about Trump, is that he gets other people to reveal their hand. Mm-hmm. It's not even anything Trump does, but he gets the mainstream media to reveal their hand. He gets the Democrats, the Republicans, all these people. They show you what they are. And he goes, he showed disloyalty that day in Helsinki when he said he believed Vladimir Putin over his own people. Oh, and by the way, by his own people, I mean the CIA. So he showed disloyalty by not agreeing with the CIA. So this is the position that you're holding, that the president is bound to the CIA. And if you don't agree with them, you are disloyal.
Well, the weird thing is like, how do you not? Trump is definitely a huckster. You know what I mean? Like, he's always 100%. Been a huckster. So he just talks like a huckster. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like people like act like they don't understand that some like New York douche from Queens calls Nigeria a shithole country until you tell him, here's why Nigeria is not a shithole country, dick. Because, I mean, like, whatever. We'd have.
I believe it was Haiti.
No, it was. I think was it was
Nigeria.
It was a bunch of different countries. I think that was one of them. But the
a bunch of different shitholes.
But the, yeah, a bunch of different shitholes. But the thing with Nigeria is Nigerian immigrants have alleviated the general practitioner shortage in this country because a lot of them go into
medicine.
They're
doing very good.
Yeah,
Nigerian immigrants.
Yeah, they do great.
Yeah,
they're raising the average for black people. It's. Now I can't be president.
Look at that. You were that close.
So close. Snake dick for president.
But it was so that was kind of funny. And then what's so great about it, what's really worth watching about the interview, is that this guy, and I didn't really know much about him, but this guy who's going Donald Trump is not fit to be president, then as the questions start rolling in, it turns out this guy's like a conservative firebrand himself who's said the most outlandish
shit ever.
It's Rush
Limbaugh level.
He's worse than Rush Limbaugh. Yeah. He's said shit that. So they go. So he's like, Donald Trump is unfit to be president. And then at a certain point, the questions he's getting, they're like, so you publicly said blacks are lazy. And he's like, mm-hmm. Yes, I did. Yeah. I said that. And they're like, do you believe that? He goes, I think
you should be allowed to say it is what I really meant.
And he goes, like, and then at one point she goes, so you said Obama is a Muslim and wasn't born in this country. And he goes, no, I never said that Obama wasn't born in this country. I was not a part of that birtherism crap. And she's like, okay, but you did say he was a Muslim. He goes, yes, several times. Yeah. I did say that.
Yeah, he's like, I said that a lot.
He offers several times.
But here's a weird thing about Obama is I remember my buddy Zach, who's a Sunni Muslim. He's a black guy. He's light-skinned. You know what I mean? He was super hype. He was like, Obama's a Muslim before Obama got elected.
Huh.
And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, he got, and this was a thing that was in, I don't know if it's like some sort of Mandela effect thing, but it was in the zeitgeist that Obama was a Muslim and that he got sworn into the Senate on Thomas Jefferson's Quran. This was said to me the first time I heard Obama's a Muslim was during the primary from a black Muslim.
Well, the stuff started leaking during the primary, and I think a lot of it was Hillary people who were putting that out there. Like, he wasn't born here. He might be a secret Muslim. Hillary Clinton, when she wants power, she will do anything for political power. Yeah. But it was...
Keep hot sauce in her purse, cheat at Domino's.
Oh, yeah. She'll do whatever the fuck she's got to do.
Kill a pedophile.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you got to kill a pedophile.
Did you see... It was one of the funniest things ever. You know the Area 51 thing's going on right now. It was like the raid on Area 51.
Right. I saw that guy on Rogan's podcast.
He's an idiot.
Yeah, but that's like, kind of what I thought. I don't know what idiot, but...
Somebody put up a Facebook page that was similar. It was like, raid the Clinton compound in Chappaqua. They can't suicide us all. And had like a million people in a couple hours. It's great.
It was weird how that thing took off. This Area 51
shit.
Gotta
see them aliens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hillary said she would. I feel like I'm the only one that remembers this. But Hillary Clinton said if she became president, it was like when stuff was starting to look a little wonky for her in the primary. She's like, if I become president,
against
I'll declassify.
Obama or against Bernie?
Against Bernie.
Okay.
And she said she would declassify all of Area 51's information. And I'm just like, are we not going to make Trump do this? Are we really, like the guy who would actually do it, are we really not going to make this an issue? Why are we not tweeting this jerk off?
Like, well, you know, Bill Clinton used to talk about that all the time, too. He was big on the, I'm going to find out what's going on with aliens and all that stuff.
Bill Clinton?
Yes, Bill Clinton.
Really?
Yeah.
I do not remember that at all.
He's talked about it before, and I guess he did declassify some things. The people who are big believers in aliens were like, Bill Clinton was trying to prepare us to, you know, accept. My feeling on the whole thing.
Should have ran on that.
I think the government loves people believing in this shit.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I think all of the fucking deep state, like CIA kill, it's like, yeah. No, there's totally aliens and there's this whole conspiracy.
Magic bullet.
And really focus on that. And we'll, it's like, that's a huge thing. And we're just going to go rape this third world country for their resources. But don't worry about that so much. But totally, to go storm Area 51. That's my feeling. I don't know if that's right or not, but that's just how I've always kind of, what my hunch has always been about that shit, that it's a big distraction. But hey, maybe not. Maybe there's fucking aliens and we got to go figure that thing out.
I mean, look, I would just honestly like to declassify it and put the thing to rest.
Oh yeah. I'd like to declassify probably 99% of shit that's out there.
No, I mean, what's the 1%?
Yeah, maybe all of it.
Yeah. Like what, like I want to know if Clinton was fucking kids with Jeffrey Epstein. Like, I mean, beyond like what would you not want I mean, I guess actual troop positions.
The Jeffrey Epstein thing is really, that's been great. Been a really great story.
I was
talking
to Stanley
about
this.
People realize that it's like you try to demonize the term conspiracy theorist as much as you want, and a lot of the crazy people who are into conspiracies make it really easy to do that. But once the Jeffrey Epstein thing, like just the information that kind of is basically known, you just go, it's pretty hard, I think, for the average person to not go, isn't it obvious that it's more of a leap to believe the official story than it is to believe that something fucking sinister is going on here?
Yeah.
Like, just to take the New York Times version of it is seems substantially crazier than to take
they're just
the
going
Alex Jones
with,
version.
They're just going with the line, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're just going with,
he was a billionaire, he was a criminal, and, you know, he committed suicide.
The craziest thing, somebody posted it right after that happened, was like somewhere on the internet it had leaked photos of El Chapo in his underwear from security cameras from the same fucking jail. And there's no video. There's no photos. Like, in his cell, in his underwear,
yeah.
El Chapo. We don't need to know why El Chapo was in his underwear, but somehow that's
some of
out.
Us needed that.
I mean, whatever. I joked off to him. I mean, I find power sexy, Dave. But it's like that's just out there. El Chapo in his underwear in the same fucking jail, but nothing from the guy on suicide watch.
Yeah.
Somebody was like, I was talking to Stanley about it. He goes, you think it was like just a prison guard that they paid off? And I was like, yeah, most people would kill a pedophile for free.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're gonna hand him $100,000 in cash? Sure. And tell him there's no way he'd ever get in trouble for this? Yeah, I would kill any pedophile for that.
Sure.
Literally any pedophile if you gave me $100,000 and said.
And you're in prison already, you gotta think too. It's not as if you're like, well, I'm risking my freedom or something like that. It's like you're already
I think it was a guard. I think a guard definitely fucking just killed him.
Yeah, I could
see
that.
Like with a nightstick across the neck.
Well, even if he did, here's the thing is that even if he did commit suicide, that doesn't in any way disprove a vast conspiracy. Because the idea is that, like, okay, so for him to commit suicide, first off, how did he get access to something where he could commit suicide? Mm-hmm. How was he not being checked by the guards? How is the whole area clean? You know what I mean? This stuff that would have had to happen. And who could have potentially pressured him into committing suicide? Maybe he was threatened with something and then committed suicide. The idea that you have a guy who's the highest profile prisoner in the country right now,
mm-hmm.
and he's off suicide watch for what, 24 hours mm-hmm. before he ends up killing himself? And this guy isn't being monitored at all, and there's just, the guards were tired, and, you know, they were understaffed, and that, like, really? And the prison
has one suicide
in the last 70-something years? Come on. This just seems crazy. And even if it wasn't for that, even if the suicide was completely legit, the whole story is this giant conspiracy that's like, dude, it exposes so much about the system that all of these people knew who this guy was, were still willing to work with him, that the government went easy on him even after he got caught. You know, I saw just the other day they were doing a thing about some of these financial institutions that have been working with him. And it's pretty much all the big ones, I think with the exception of Citibank. I might be wrong about that. There was one. He had a lawsuit against one of the big financial companies, like before all this stuff. So they, I think, stopped fucking with him. But that I thought that was real interesting, where it's like, so, that you know, these big financial companies who have all been talking about and some actually putting into action that they won't do business with gun manufacturers because they're like, well, you know, someone's got to do something about these mass shootings or whatever, blah, blah, blah. These guys are doing business with a guy who had been convicted of soliciting minors. He's not even like, oh, there's rumors about this, like straight up a conviction for fucking being a statutory rapist. I mean, not that wasn't the conviction, but it was for attempting statutory rape, whatever you would call it, soliciting minors for sex. And they're so it's like we're kind of, oh, these big financial institutions, they all of a sudden they have this fucking morality about doing business with gun, you know, dealers. Get the fuck out of here, man. It just it's like there's so many things about this story that are just a great example.
Well, Stanley on High Society, Stanley floated this thing. We were talking about the Epstein stuff and we were looking at just the dates. It like lines up and he was just like, I bet he had dirt. Like Stanley goes, I bet he had dirt on Madoff. And that's how he got off on that first one.
Huh.
And you can't have that come out.
can't say you let a fucking kid fucker get out so you could lock up a guy who did a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
Because those are not equal, especially to years after the financial crisis when we're all kind of like, financial crime doesn't matter anymore. That's like the world is kind of like, who gives a shit? Like they're all crooked, right? We're back to that. Like it's been long enough where like everything's not in chaos anymore. And like, so it's like, maybe, you know what I mean? Like all the dates line up. With like Madoff and like, I was like, this is a guy who like knows all these finance guys because he had a $50 million townhouse that was just a gift.
Yeah.
And it just didn't show up on any IRS forms. Nobody really knows how he made money. His financial firm had what? One client, yeah. Right?
One known client. And well, this is, it
the
is
client
very hard.
That most likely to benefit from human trafficking too. The Victoria's Secret.
Yes. Catalog. It's very hard to find a billionaire, or maybe he wasn't a billionaire. I've heard disputes about this. Maybe he was like worth several $100 million, whatever.
It's a lot of money.
It's hard to find somebody like that who you can't find a track record for how they made their money. That's very rare. And this is a guy who was hired by the current attorney general's father with no background in education, then gets hired by Bear Stearns and makes partner. With no like clear reason why, then starts his own equity company, makes hundreds of millions of dollars with no known investors. He also has a Saudi passport with his picture on it, with a different name. Is hanging out with the Clintons, with the Trumps, with royalty, with all these important people. Has a pedophile island, and then conveniently, right when he gets busted, offs himself in maximum security when he was on suicide watch. Previously,
I kind of
but that's a total normal story. There's nothing to see there.
Well, it's weird because I also can see how like that was just his hustle was just finding 16-year-olds because they weren't. It wasn't like 5-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't 8-year-olds. It wasn't like it was 16-year-olds, which can easily make look like an 18-year-old.
Sure,
he said there was a thing where he would like throw them in like college sweatshirts at the parties and shit like that.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
And like I almost felt like it was just like, so like
entrapment for other people.
So like you're a governor, right? Mm-hmm. Now, not only are you cheating on your wife, he's like, oh, by the way, that girl's 16. You're double fucked because no one cares.
To add to your theory, they found, and this is public information, that the feds found cameras in every room of his mansion.
Yeah.
So not only that, but we got you on tape. Oh, by the way, that girl was 16 years old. We have you on tape.
And I've gaslit her so well that she'll say whatever the fuck I want.
So how are you planning on voting on Bill C-7482?
Because
I'd like you to vote yes.
And here's the thing. So now you got that. Let's say it's Governor Clinton, right? Now it's like he's the president. He's talking to Bill Gates. Bill Gates is like, oh, yeah, I was about to go to your buddy Jeffrey's island for a party if you're going to have a good time. And Bill Clinton just going to go, yeah, it's a blast because – you can't be like, don't go. He'll trick you into fucking a kid.
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he'll trick you into fucking a kid. Not from personal experience.
Yeah. I didn't do it, but...
We played Yahtzee.
Listen, man. 16-year-old kid.
It's that, to me, seems more plausible than just the idea that, like, oh, he just happened to live this crazy life of secrecy and, you know, like, whatever. And then he offed himself. All right, guys, let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is InfiniteCBD.com. Infinite CBD offers the cleanest, healthiest, and purest form of CBD available anywhere. CBD gives you all the benefits of marijuana without getting you high. I highly recommend it. I've benefited a lot from Infinite CBD personally. The Freezing Point topical cream is really great for pain management. They also have a bunch of products for different things, whether it's insomnia, anxiety, if you can't get to sleep, if you have trouble waking up in the morning. The CBD AM pills that have caffeine in them are incredible. Whatever your issue is, go check out InfiniteCBD.com and see which one of their products can help you live a healthier life. Research has shown that CBD has helped people with a variety of different ailments, so go look into it because these products are really amazing. So go to InfiniteCBD.com, and if you use the promo code POTP15, you're going to get 15% off your entire order. So that's InfiniteCBD.com, promo code POTP15 for 15% off your entire order. All right, let's get back into the show. There has been a real change in the American culture that people are all so open to this idea. And it seems to be accelerating. Like me and you, like our age, I feel like we're an interesting age where you still, like, we grew up in a different America. And I mean being little kids. Like, we were still little
the
80, kids.
80, Reagan America.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the little kids where, I mean, when we were.
Hugs, not drugs, America.
Yes. When we were little kids, when we were 7, 8 years old, if you were watching WWF wrestling mm-hmm. or something, which is always the, you know, the gauge of the culture,
mm-hmm.
All they had to do was throw an American flag on somebody and he was the good guy, and throw a foreign flag on someone and he was the bad guy. And when this guy came down going USA, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan came down going USA.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan, we're all fat crackhead whose gimmick was day laborer. He just carried a 2x4. He was just a fat drug addicted day laborer.
Yeah, but let's not deny the talent. The talent was there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Guy carried a 2x4 to work with him. He was
like, 3-point stance.
I got to go fucking, I got to go build some stairs after this. Yeah. But he's going to chant USA. And the whole crowd is like, fuck yeah, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, you're our guy. Fuck this other guy who's for whatever other country. Whatever other country it could be. Oh my God, do you remember the gimmick? My favorite wrestling gimmick of all time was when Sergeant Slaughter became a bad guy.
When he became Iranian?
He defected to Iraq.
Oh yeah, it was Iraq.
It was in the first Persian Gulf War. You know, we had a lot of defectors in that war. A lot of people sympathized with the Iraqis. So that was his storyline, that he was Mr. America, but then saw the Iraqi way of living and was like, I'm with Saddam. And everyone just bought it hook, line, and sinker and was like, fuck you. You betrayed us. But that was America. Now, if you had said in that rah-rah USA, we're the best America, that actually what's going on. I mean, people, when the fucking Iran-Contra scandal first came out, people didn't fucking believe it for shit. They were like, this is a wild conspiracy.
And now we're just the idea, of course they were selling guns to the cartels.
Of course they were.
They had to track the guns.
But the idea that you're telling me that Reagan sided with Iran, sold weapons to Iran, that Reagan was involved in dealing drugs into America. First off, Reagan's a hawk on Iran, and he hates drugs more than anything else. He would never do this. But actually, it turns out that's exactly what he was doing. Exactly what he was doing. And back then, and this is pre-internet, this is pre-whatever the modern culture is, it seems like, I'm not saying no one would have believed it, but the vast majority of people would have been like, hey, you're crazy. Even if I'm a good liberal, I'd be like, no, I love America. We're the great nation. We defeated the Nazis. We're the good guys, and we would never be the bad guys. But whatever it was through the fucking 90s, whatever the fuck the 90s were, at post 9/11, the Bush administration, the financial crisis, all of these things, whatever it was, now we're in a world where it seems like most people, if you were to suggest, oh, our government did this real evil shit, they go,
yeah,
sure. Yeah, I can
see that. Now, because they don't like Trump.
Well, but they could see Trump being the one who did that.
Yeah,
but those people would be, you know, but still, there just seems to be a lot less. Certainly, you're right. On the anti-Trump side, and this is what's frustrating about the anti-Trump side, is that they just have hatred for Donald Trump and seem to almost give a pass to everything else in government. It's very strange to me that the most obvious lessons of the Trump presidency have not even kind of been learned
by the anti-Trump people. I've been thinking about this more and more. It's like I feel like we're almost less aware. And I'll tell you this, I think government is functioning better in spite and also because of Donald Trump. Like, when he took out of the Paris Accords, right, there was a coalition of governors that were like, yeah, we're just going to do that. The ones who didn't sign that were the ones who were like, no, we don't want that. Seems like a good function of government. Like, it's just like, and that's in spite of, like, he just did it to be a dick, maybe. I don't know. Like, a lot of the stuff that I agree with him on, like, he's not, like, I agree with everything he's doing in China. You know what I mean?
Yeah, do you?
I really honestly do because of the IP stuff. And, like, I've watched, like, stuff on it, and, like, he's just not selling it right. So, like, I've said this before, like, so the Chinese government entered the IMF treaty, right? Was it 5, 6, 8 years ago? Something like that? Like, okay. So when you do that, we're supposed to be able to put tariffs on Chinese goods because it's anything that the government has a part in that subsidizes. Right. We're supposed to be able to put tariffs on it so that it is actually fair competition. That's the point of it. We're supposed to be able to put duties on it up to the level of the subsidies. The Chinese government hides the subsidies, but the IMF arbitrators don't have the manpower to really get to the bottom of what the fuck a Chinese government is doing. They're now reopening all those cases because of Trump's tariffs. I don't like the fact that he's abusing the idea of a national threat, but we needed to check the Chinese.
Well, I
even the buying Greenland thing. I'm like, look, kind of dumb, but at the same time, there's multiple strategic reasons why would have been a good idea to buy Greenland. They have massive amounts of minerals that we need.
I'm pretty critical of the tariffs, and I wouldn't say I agree with what he's doing with China, but one of the things that was really interesting that Trump did, and this was at, I believe, the first G7 meeting, not this one that just happened. It was at the first G7 meeting that he went to, is he basically went there in the first day. All these other world leaders were telling him how terrible tariffs are and how much they'll hurt the economy and all this stuff. And he came back the next day. And he said, okay, I've thought about it. How about this? No tariffs. No tariffs at all. But no subsidies either. And no tariffs from other sides. We all agree no tariffs and no subsidies. And I thought it was interesting on anything.
I'd be way more for that.
I thought it was interesting. He actually arrived at the correct position. And then he kind of backed off it and no one really agreed to it and took him up on it. But they still went, oh my God, he wants all these tariffs. And you're like, well, he did actually throw out what would be, in my opinion, and probably yours too, the correct position.
That is the correct position.
Which would be no subsidies, no tariffs. We can all have our free trade, but not one side is using tariffs and subsidies and the other isn't. So I thought that was interesting. But what I mean more, to me, this is like the two biggest lessons, and this isn't even like deep ANCAP philosophy stuff. Just surface level, what I think everybody should get. And I would think, I actually was somewhat optimistic when Trump first got elected that maybe the anti-Trumpers would get this. There's two basic lessons, okay? Number one is Trump's president, okay? I know you're furious about something he tweeted. I know he rubs you the wrong way. I get it. You hate Donald Trump. But ask yourself this very basic question. What's really changed?
Mm-hmm.
What's really different about your life? From Donald Trump to Barack Obama. And the truth for the vast majority of all of us is not much. Not much about your actual life has really been changed. The interesting
other than 100,000 people with immigration status? Is it, it's three, how much is it? It's 100,000 people, the Dreamers?
Right.
So well, that, okay, those maybe. People.
Well, yeah, I mean, but he hasn't deported any of them.
Yeah, but I mean, whatever. Their life is different.
I guess
being in fear versus not being in fear.
Okay,
is
so those people maybe are worried about it, but even that is a worry, not anything actually different. And if you're gonna say just immigrants being deported in general, I mean, like, yeah, it's really not that drastically different from Obama to Trump.
The rhetoric
has been crazy different. Well, so that might create some anxiety. But I'm saying, like, aside from rhetoric, in actual reality, what is different is not that much. And even with Obama, you'd say, okay, so once he signed that executive order that Dreamers were going to have legal status or whatever. So, but before that, you could say they had, you know what I mean? They had that anxiety too. My point is just that the big story that I think should be discussed sometimes is how much is the same. Like, we went from this, in terms of rhetoric and optics, polar opposite presidents. Mm. But actually, the way government functions, the way the whole system functions, there's a lot more that's the same than different. Dude, and that almost never comes up.
There's things that I think are better.
I agree with you. But they're all kind of around the edges.
Yeah,
they're all kind of around the edges.
Well, I thought the legal precedent of the Obamacare mandate, I thought that was a bad precedent. I feel like we've talked about it where I thought like the idea of the United States government requiring you to buy a product under penalty of law.
Oh, I agree with that.
He got rid of it, and everybody was like, this is going to kill Obamacare. And the projected enrollments were supposed to go down every year because obviously more people are getting on it, so less people would be enrolling. The projections were, like, they thought it would tank it. Nobody would enroll this year. It would kill the exchanges. It was less than the predictions under Obama with the mandate.
Yeah.
The decrease in enrollment.
Yeah. Well, but also a lot of that is the Medicare eligibility. They make so many people eligible for basically free healthcare that they all enroll and then they count those as enrollment numbers. Still, I get your point. I like that. I like the corporate tax cuts. There's certain things that I like that he's done. But I'm just saying to real people who are so furious, it's like your life hasn't changed that much.
Well, they said a lot of working class people are it ended up paying more taxes because the deductions are gone.
That might be true.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think is fucked.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree with
but
you.
I think the deduction system was always fucked.
I think the whole system is kind of a mess, but the system before Obamacare was kind of a mess also lots of reasons. But the other thing, aside from the fact that things are more or less the same, and I think me and you will really agree with this, and this is something that has been very disappointing to me, that has gone over the heads or just intentionally been ignored by just about every anti-Trumper that you know. Say not everyone. Not everyone. I did have this guy, Michael Wood Jr., on my show. He's done Rogan a couple times. He was like an ex-Baltimore cop who was very anti, you know, modern policing practices. He was an interesting guy. But he was very anti-gun rights and or at least in favor of much more harsh gun control.
Okay.
And he said to me when I had him on my podcast after Trump was on, he goes, you know, I've actually been rethinking a lot of that because after seeing Trump rise up and I'm genuinely concerned about like the rise of a fascist government and rounding up American citizens. I go, OK, you know what? Maybe there is more of a need for like people's rights to bear arms. But this on this theme, the idea that since Trump's come, you're advocating for more and more government power, more and more government control. And it's almost like it never dawned on you that the government could be run by someone you don't like. And if that is the case, wouldn't you go, oh, wow, I'm not so sure I want that guy to inherit a government with all of this like unmitigated power?
Well, what's crazy is like you would think the Democrats would come around a little on it.
That's my
point. The only person talking about, I'm talking about the ones in government. And the only person talking about limiting executive power is Rand Paul was the only person in the first, he hasn't done it in a while. It was the first year. It was just the first year.
No, he'll still talk about it a fair amount. Yeah.
So it was Rand Paul, but then it's like, then you literally have Nancy Pelosi being like, well, if the wall's a national emergency, maybe we'll declare national emergency. So it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Aren't you the people who are saying this is wrong, that he can't do this? You're like, well, if he can do it, was like, wasn't the one of the fundamental first things you were taught as a child, two wrongs don't make a right?
But, you know, I understand it more from Nancy Pelosi's perspective, because Nancy Pelosi is just a naked
charlatan.
Power broker.
Yeah.
She's all about gaining power. And so when Nancy Pelosi sees it, Nancy Pelosi doesn't really care about a wall. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, they've supported bills with walls in them before. This is just the issue where they can hit their opponent on. So what Nancy goes is she goes, look, we're going to be back in there before you know it. I actually like the precedent that the executive can have this much power, because then we'll be able to wield that power at some point. So I get it from her perspective. What I don't get is that your average Trump hater won't go, hey, isn't it a pretty good, isn't this the best position ever? I was very optimistic about this when he first got in. They go, wouldn't we be able to pitch you on, hey, maybe the president shouldn't have this much power.
Yeah.
Maybe the executive shouldn't have this much power.
Because listen, I literally thought the same
thing.
It
could go to your guy Obama, or it could go to your Hitler, Trump.
Yeah.
So let's not give him that much power. Let's like dissolve the power, spread it out a little bit more.
Infinity Gauntlet with Iron Man, good. Infinity Gauntlet with Thanos, bad.
Right.
Still probably should get rid of the Infinity Gauntlet, right? Like it's very simple.
Yes, exactly. I thought, and it's been disappointing to me how little that message resonates at all.
Nothing.
It's like, no.
It's not even.
No, we need the federal government to do 10 times as much, but we just got to get Trump out. Doesn't matter. And that's really, that's crazy to me that never clicked on any level. It's like, okay, and here's the thing too, is that when you go to the extreme of being like, you know, Trump is Hitler or whatever, what the problem with that, I mean, there's many, but one of the major problems with that is that you leave your imagination no room to think of something worse than Donald Trump. And it can get a lot worse. It can get a lot worse. So you go, okay, imagine all of these government powers that Bernie Sanders is going to increase. President Bernie Sanders will increase the government so much. And then imagine five times worse than Trump following Bernie Sanders.
Well, just imagine Trump again. You know what I mean? Like, fuck that. Just imagine another George W. Bush fucking Cheney combo after Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, which is more plausible than another Donald Trump or somebody worse than Donald Trump. Because, like, here's the thing. It's like, I'm not...
Well, that is somebody worse than Donald Trump, is another Bush-Cheney combo.
Sure. But you know what I mean? Like, You get what I mean? Like, you just like, for what these people, like, I mean, these are the same people who are sitting there going, the Republicans probably wishing they had a Georgia. No, I'm not a Republican. I don't consider myself a Republican. Like, but it's like, anybody, he doesn't have the body count. We were talking about this a few months. We were talking about this at Skankfest, I think, where we were just like, I think he could easily walk through this election just based on the fact that he could look across the aisle at any opponent who's voted for literally any military action and go, I'm the first president since Jimmy Carter. And Jimmy Carter did not start a new military aggression in their first term. And as of right now, he is that.
Did Carter? Carter may not have. But
I think it might be since it's our lifetime.
After. Yeah, everyone in our lifetime. And that is really, I mean, look, I hate to grade him on the Obama-Bush curve, but it's hard not to. There you go. If there's one thing you want, you got to give this guy, which really is something to give Trump. There's been no new wars. Forget no new taxes. There's been no new wars under this president. And it's amazing to me how much the anti-Trumpers, who still to some degree feel like they should oppose war, I know there's a lot of them who I've talked to who still, if you go like, are you anti-war? They'd be like, yes. And you'd be like, okay, well, here's the thing, right? Like,
but you want to go to war with Russia right now.
Well, I mean, they won't say that blatantly, but they'll be like, you know, there's just a lot of this saber rattling kind of, well, they attacked our democracy and we have to respond.
But it's bizarre. Like,
so what does that mean?
We're not talking about the fact that I believe Iran did the same thing for Bernie Sanders. To a lesser degree, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe China did it for Hillary Clinton, to a lesser degree.
Yeah.
Because they were worried about what Trump was saying about China.
And I'm not even sure it's the China thing is too much of a lesser degree. I mean, I'd have to look more into it,
but like, we know it happened. The Bernie Sanders campaign came to the Hillary Clinton campaign and said, we've found evidence that this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they did nothing. And obviously the Sanders campaign, look, like I said, we were talking about this before the show. I don't like Bernie Sanders. I think he kind of sucks. I think every issue he has, he falls apart with any kind of scrutiny. If you question him on anything, he can't rebut.
And he gets very, resentful
mm-hmm.
that you had the nerve to question him on anything. And almost
because
all of his policies and almost all of his policies fall apart on a non-surface level. If you dig a little bit deeper, they tend to fall apart.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay. So you've proposed whatever it is. I mean, like, I know we're doing the math when I was on Kennedy. Guy Benson was hosting the other day, and it was like $50 trillion in new spending over 10 years just on a few of his plans. It was just on the Medicare for All, free college, and his climate change plan added up to $50 trillion over 10 years. And that's not all of his new spending.
Yeah.
That's just like the big ones. And you're like, okay, so you're saying $50 trillion, it's $5 trillion a year. We're going to more than double the federal spending levels. And like, this comes from just the billionaires. The billionaires, if you confiscate everything they have, their entire worth, you're at like something in the ballpark of $10 trillion. Okay. Well, you proposed 50. So that's 40 now. And you're not proposing we confiscate all of their wealth. So you've still got like, you know, just tons
even
of money.
If you go, even
so
if you go down through the people
pay.
Worth a couple of hundred million,
right?
Even if you go down to the guys who are worth $5 million. Even if you do that, because that's how much Bernie Sanders is worth. About that, right? At this point, even if you go down all the way down there, it's not enough to run the government for a year.
Yeah,
you still need GDP to be running. And here's the thing: is like, there's nothing.
Well, and you destroy the GDP if you just confiscated all their wealth. So the point is, like, obviously, and even Bernie will admit this sometimes when pushed. You're talking about raising middle class taxes, right? And he'll go, "Well, yeah, we're talking about raising middle class taxes, but you're going to save so much from your health care bills that it will be a net positive to you." Okay, fair enough. But now after that, you've talked about raising all these, and now you're talking about free college. So we're going to have to pay for this, right? Middle class taxes are going to have to go up because we've already taxed the shit out of rich people. And now we're even taxing middle class people as well. And we're going to provide free college. So now you're saying that people who don't go to college have to subsidize the ones who do. Now, it's just the nature of government. You can always say we're going to tax rich guy to help out the little guy. But before you know it, you're taxing everybody and you're helping out the big guy more than the little guy. This is the way it always fucking works. And that's what's so you go. So now you're saying, but if you asked him that, he would just scoff. I mean, when people ask him why he doesn't give more to charity, he just scoffs. Why do you maximize your deductions so you pay so little in income tax yourself? He's just like you're just an asshole for even asking this question. And you're like, no, but this disproves your whole fucking starting point. It's, yeah.
Well, it's also, whatever. I'll say this about the healthcare thing. You want to have a public option. Figure it out. You can figure it out. Right, you're smarter than me. You're Bernie Sanders, right? You're supposed to be smarter than some fucking dumb
bop.
Right? You know, so figure it out. But why do you have to get rid of an industry that employs tens of thousands of people? It generates billions of dollars in GDP, thereby tax revenue. It's because you know you can't actually, unless you outlaw private insurance, you can't scale Medicare for all in a country of 300 million people. No one ever fucking talks about that the biggest problem with any government program is the fact that they don't account for how difficult it is to scale shit for a business. Like, I always say this, is like why can Finland do it? Finland's got like, what, 30 million people?
Yeah.
Right?
29 million of them are white.
More than that.
Let's get real.
Right. I believe in Sweden, they're racist towards the Finns. Yeah. Like, there's a certain type, and it's not even like all the Finns. It's like Finns who immigrated to Sweden and went back and then came back. It's a whole fucking thing because like they've got like so few black people, it's not even worth it to be racist to them. Like it's like
there's
a couple of Cameroonian, a couple of Cameroonian barbers. Like you need a fresh lineup. You know what I mean? Like it's like, but like they don't. He never talks about that. He never talks about the fact that all these countries set up these programs before we were a global economy and before the U.S. was a reserve currency. So if you seize an industry in the reserve currency, in the largest economy in the world, post-globalization, it's going to affect global markets. He cannot address that question. He can't. He can't do it. And so it's like, look, I'm not a morally bankrupt person. I would like for every single person to have a doctor to go to when they are sick.
Of course, yeah.
Answer the fucking questions about why it will be better. Because here's the thing. Any country near our population, right? So Indonesia is the next one down. It's 180 million people, right? 180 million. Mm-hmm. Then it's India and China, right? Is above us. We're in this weird position. We've got better healthcare than those three places.
Sure.
And there's no one else. I think the next country down is like Russia with 80 million.
Right.
So it's like, what's the precedent? We have better healthcare than Russia. So you can't show me a country even approaching our size that does this well.
Well,
and you can show me a million examples of how government cannot scale.
Of course. And he loves to. This is another thing that really creeps me out. Not even just bothers me, but actually creeps me out about Bernie Sanders. Is that, again, if
weird
anyone
old
brings
Jew
up,
fingers.
Well, that's. I'll be honest, that doesn't help. You see him hitting that speed bag? They're just trying to throw 1-2s to a speed bag.
I just think about him like eating like a cat's deli sandwich and it's like falling apart, but he's like shoving the meat back in. And I feel like that's how he fingers his wife. You know what I mean?
I'll be honest. I got nothing but appetized by that description. Yeah. There's the Jew in me. Yeah. Cat's deli. It's the best. Anyway, but there's something where if you say to Bernie Sanders, right, if you were to mention, oh, hey, like you brag about being for socialism. Thank you, sir. But every, socialist experiment in the 20th century and in the 21st century seems to have resulted in starvation and genocide, like really the worst things the world's ever seen. Which, of course, I know listeners to this show know, it's like this is not hyperbole. Like, this is really true. That socialism
lived in Sheepshead Bay, which is right near Brighton Beach, for well over a decade.
Yeah.
It is. You talk to those guys.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Talk to the dads. There's a reason they all vote Republican.
There's there's oftentimes no better advocates of capitalism than people who actually lived under socialism. But this is not a joke. So, I would think it's like if I were out there advocating for, say, democratic fascism. And I went, look, we need a fascist government, but it's got to be done democratically. And you were to bring up, you go, hey, fascism was a real disaster when it was tried in the 20th century. And I'd be like, that's an outrageous thing to even ask me. I have nothing to do with that type of fascism. Like, that would seem unfair. If you're advocating for this system that, when tried, led to this horrific, you know, like, really, really bad. And by the way, far worse than fascism was socialism in the 20th century. Not even close. So, you know, I mean, they were both bad, but far worse. So you would think you'd have, but he just scoffs at you. However, Bernie Sanders praised like all of these horrific socialist regimes at the time.
Oh, there's the clip. Like, I mean, I know we've both seen the clip of him praising breadlines.
Praising breadlines. But it's not
anybody
just like,
who thinks he could win a general election.
When there's a clip of you praising breadlines.
Who doesn't think that that will be played literally everywhere.
And also, Donald Trump is particularly good. You're not just running against an average candidate. You're running against Donald Trump. Donald Trump will hit you over and every single day. He'll talk about breadline Bernie. You know, there, I just came up with a nickname for Donald Trump. Like, it'll be that every single day. He'll make you think about it. And in some ways, in this example, rightfully so. But he...
And it's a seedless rye. Who wants a seedless rye?
But this guy praised. I mean, not even just praised. He had his honeymoon in the Soviet Union in the 80s. Like, this isn't like the Soviet Union back when they could go, well, we didn't really know about the crimes. This is like a few years before the whole thing collapsed. He's like, they had these wonderful cultural centers, and it's just saying great things about them. Went over there, praised Hugo Chavez, praised all the worst regimes. But if you were to ask him about any of that, he just scoffs like, oh my God, what an idiot, what a dishonest like person you are that you'd even bring this up. You're not even allowed to bring it up. And then he'll just say, no, because now he's pivoted. No, it's not about any of these authoritarian regimes. It's about Scandinavia. That's what I'm saying we should have. But there's a reason
why. But look at the rest of Europe.
But the
hijab bans. Whatever you want to say about what Muslims are doing, I don't believe you should ban hijabs. You know what I mean? It's a religious thing.
No, I agree. But even in the Scandinavian countries, there's a reason why the president of Denmark came out and was like, hey, Bernie, we're not a socialist country. Stop lumping us in there with them. The Scandinavian countries are not that for a while.
But in the 80s, didn't they have to let in more free market capitalism? I mean, doesn't Norway? Norway's in a way more capitalist than us. Their government has an investment fund from all of the land that, I mean, I guess it's
here's
the
what
land,
happened.
Which is socialist.
But here's what happened, more or less, with the Scandinavian countries. And I know more about Sweden than I know about the other ones, but more or less.
I mean, they got like, the hot ones.
And, right? And they're yes, but.
Iceland's
it's not
got
just
the
that.
Loose ones.
You're goddamn right. But it's not just, more or less, this is the trajectory of all of them. But from, say, 1850 to 1950, Sweden was one of the most free market countries in the world. Mm-hmm. They had lower tax rates than America did, very free markets, and they became a very rich country. In addition to that, they also avoided the two world wars. While the rest of Europe was destroying
the
them,
wars.
Well, maybe a little bit, but they didn't get in on fucking bombing the shit out of you have to think a lot of these other countries actually destroyed themselves and rebuilt, destroyed themselves again and rebuilt. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of wasted, resources
and time.
In all of that. Yes. So they stayed out of that. They're almost, I mean, you could say from Sweden from 1850 to 1950 is like a Ron Paul success story. Free markets, stay out of wars, stay out of entangling alliances, just do your thing. And, you know, that so they basically had that. And then the democratic socialists started to rise in influence. Now, it took them a while. It wasn't really until the 70s that they started implementing their programs. And as they did that, their economic growth grinded down to a almost standstill. I mean, they went from growing like very rapidly to growing slower and slower. It's the old thing about how do you get a small fortune? You start with a big fortune and blow part of it. It's like they started very, very rich and they blew a big part of it on these Democrats. And then once they, by the 80s and 90s, they started rolling back a bunch of these programs because they were like, this is crazy. It's not working. And their economy started growing faster. So what you have today are countries that rank fairly high in like the economic freedom index. They're not, there's very low regulation. There's not a lot, but
they rank better than this country.
Right now, I think we might have passed them, but they were ranking better than America for a while.
And I guarantee they rank better than a lot of states. The more socialist, like they probably don't, maybe not overall. And that's Texas's economy is booming. You know what I mean? But like, I bet they rank better than like New York or California.
That's interesting. I've never even seen that compared, but I bet you're right. So they have, what they have is small populations, a homogenous country, and they have certain sectors that the government pretty much runs. And for this, they pay 60 to 70% of what they make in taxes. Now, that's okay. You can make the argument or talk about it, but to just say we want democratic socialism because of these democratic socialist countries that aren't democratic socialist countries, where it's like, hey, talk to the American people about that, really. Now, you could say, hey, you know, you're going to pay a little bit more in taxes, Mr. I make 60K a year, but you're going to get more in healthcare. But if you actually said to them, hey, we're all for Sweden and Denmark and this, how do you feel about paying 70% of what you make in taxes? I don't think you're going to win elections on that. So Mr. Democratic Socialist, I don't think you can democratically win if you're honest about what you're talking about proposing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I really do think you should have to answer for the fact that it's like, yeah, dude, why is it that you only have nice things to say about the most brutal authoritarian regimes all around the world? Why are you on record praising Castro? Like, Chavez, he's some great guy. Hugo Chavez, what, you're having your honeymoon in the Soviet Union. Does that not seem a little bit weird? Like, would you, any of the left-leaning people who listen to this show, all four of you, would you see anything weird if there was a guy, like a Trump guy, who was like, oh, no, I'm not a fascist. What do you mean these fascist things? But then it was like, he just praised every single fascist regime.
Like, if Trump had Richard
regime,
Spencer on his podcast, I'd be a little worried.
You'd be like, oh.
If he had, like, Chris Cantwell on his podcast, like, shortly after that, I'd be like, that guy might be not exactly what...
No, if you have both those guys on your podcast, you're a
probably,
piece of shit.
Yeah, you're probably a human.
You're clearly a Nazi.
You're human garbage,
But that's... I'm just saying. It's not, you know...
I never met a guy named Smith who was Jewish before, so I'm just saying maybe it's a fucking... I mean Trump.
No, I totally... Listen, I'm a total Jew. I love the Jews, but I'm a Christian conservative. And I think those guys have a lot of good things to say.
Yeah.
That's all I'm talking about. But why would it be not, like, why is it not okay to look at that and go, yeah, that's really bad. You can't. And by the way, I shouldn't be able to run for president. I'm sure I would get ruined. And not just for having those two on my podcast, for fucking just millions of things I've done and said over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, okay. Yeah, it might be worse to have. Yeah. There's a lot, there's a lot of things.
I got some skeletons in my closet.
Yeah, we all do. I mean, just there's certain people that we're both friends with now who have probably committed significantly more actual crimes than either of those two people.
Yeah, but no one cares about that. No one cares about that. It's like, it's not just crimes.
Some of them violent.
Yeah. No one. I remember during the whole, it was like at the height of the Me Too thing. It was my favorite thing anyone said, but it was Joey Diaz was on Rogan's podcast. And Joey Diaz, there's something about him. He's just so funny and so lovable that like, it doesn't matter what he says. But it was the height of the Me Too thing, and they were talking about Louis C.K. and some other people. And he goes, he was like, Joey, let me tell you something. He goes, I committed an armed kidnapping. He goes, I held a gun to a guy forced him into a trunk. And I fucking forced him into it. I got convicted. I did some time for it. I go, I don't know. I wasn't even thinking like on kidnapping. I was just like, I got a gun. Get in the trunk. You know, he was like, and he tells the story and he goes, and no one cares. They'll book me at any comedy club. No one's banning me from things. But it's because I didn't like grab a chick's ass. You know, like it's just that's not the crime that we're interested in right now, or something like Louis, where it's not even a crime, it's just an infraction of what we just decided the moral rules were today. And this is, by the way, this is that is the essence of what fucking what separates me, I think, from the left in general, which, believe me, my life would be so much easier if I could just take everything I do but be a leftist with it. Like,
you know what's crazy?
My life, doors would open. I'd be more successful. I'd have less heartache in the New York comedy scene and all
have
that.
Have you been watching Bill Maher since he came back?
No.
Okay. So
I only watch
back,
Bill Maher like very occasionally or when there's something online that
I usually watch, because I've just been watching him forever. So I usually will just throw it. It's easy. HBO always works. You know what I mean? Like, on Saturday morning, I'll usually throw it on. But I'm watching him and I'm like, if all the things he's mad about got him mad before he was famous, he'd be right where me and you are today.
Sorry, say that one more time.
So, like, if all the things that he's getting mad at with the left currently happened when we got mad about it before, you know, before he was famous.
Yeah.
Before, you know, before there was a, obviously he's got a massive financial interest in staying a Democrat.
Yep.
But he would be, like, neither of us consider ourselves Republican. He would be, I think, more in line with what we talk about because he's more and more, and the war on drugs, you know what I mean? Like, more and more just the same kind of shit.
Well, he used to. Did you ever see, if you haven't watched, and everyone listening, if you haven't watched, you ever seen when he had Ron Paul on his show back in the day?
I don't know if I
did. He had Ron Paul on in the middle of Ron Paul's presidential runs, and he was like loving the guy. He was like, dude, you make so much sense. Like,
well, even John Stewart.
This was George W. Bush's America,
yeah.
And Ron Paul was the anti-Bush guy. Yeah. So it was easy to just go, oh, yeah, of course we shouldn't fight these wars. Of course this is the reason they hate us. Obviously.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, then.
But under Obama.
Obama ruined everything. Obama ruined the left. I think more and more, one of the biggest part of Obama's legacy is that he destroyed all of the good impulses on the left. It's like he exploited.
Which was the empathy.
Yeah.
Now it's just empathy
well,
for here.
You know what it is? It's like, I don't know what to say. Let's say there's some guy you knew who is like really, you know, had some good impulses, was an empathetic person, cared about people, but had a real weakness for hot chicks. And then some hot chick who was just a cold bitch came into his life and really just, he just couldn't see her as the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
So she just ruined him. That's what Obama was for the left. There was something about a cool black guy who was the first ever black president who could absolve you of all your racism. It was almost like this like magical religious potion he could put on you. You support me, so you are now not real. All your white guilt is now vanished. You know, like that was Obama. And so the idea that Obama would get in and you'd go, you know, Obama's a war criminal. He's guilty of treason. He's every bit as bad as George W. Bush is. That just didn't compute. It's like, no, you're robbing me of everything that I just gained from this. And he, look, if you look at what Obama did to destroy the anti-war left, and there's still some good ones out there. There's still that Aaron Mate guy, and there's Jimmy Dore, and there's some good guys out there. But what he did, he decimated the anti-war left. Like, decimated them in a way that no Republican ever could have.
No, I mean, look, so I was working in bars when Obama got reelected during the reelection. And I was just like, around election season, and it's why I kind of started ignoring 90% of news and I block everyone on Facebook who posts about politics. Like, or like I unfollow them or like shit like that. Is because I get so annoyed at people not seeing beyond the headlines and they're not seeing what's wrong with it's like perfectly okay to support Obama, but it's like, let's acknowledge the fucking problems. You know what I mean? Like I'm almost like, fine. Like if you're saying that you're a lesser of two evils guy and you think he was the lesser of two evils, that's fine. But if we're going to really ignore the fact that he's just as bad as Bush when it comes to some of these violating sovereign borders and dropping bombs on people shit, I can't fuck with you. And I remember I had two bartenders say to me one night, nah, man, I'm like for that. We need to get these guys. And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ. These are like, you know, and like bartenders are, you know, they're socialists who don't claim their tips. You know what I mean? Like they're socialists who don't pay taxes. Like the service industry is full of that. And it's like, again, fine. Like as somebody who's like, yeah, keep your fucking money. Like I don't give a fuck. But don't sit here and be like, I'm looking at these two guys and I'm just like, you're fucking kidding, right? The Democrats were the anti-war people under Bush.
Dude, there's this video that somebody made, a listener of the show made, of me and Scott Horton talking about war crimes and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they put over it the images of like starving children in Yemen and like all these countries that we've bombed. And like, I literally.
What's funny is like they have all those corner stores here. Why don't they just open a couple of, you know, Takis?
Because they need white people to patronize them.
Mm.
But I'm telling you, I couldn't watch the video. And I'm the guy having this conversation.
Oh,
and it was like brutal to watch. You actually forget about, you know, it's like even someone like me who talks about this shit all the time. You look in the eyes of this fucking 4-year-old who's skin and bones. It's like it's fucking
Yemen
brutal.
Is something like more than half the people are malnourished at this point.
It's just outrageous. It's the poorest country in the Middle East.
It's Arab on Arab Vietnam.
It's But it's real Arab on Arab Vietnam with America supporting. So yeah. Vietnam, but yeah. with less direct American bombing.
Yeah.
But it's really, even as someone who talks about it all the time, you're looking at the poorest country in the Middle East, which is tough to actually wrap your head around that statement to compare to any of our lives. The poorest country in the Middle East already before the war started. There's a full blockade. They're being starved to death intentionally. It's a war of genocide. We still don't even know the numbers. It's going to be hundreds of thousands. It's going to be.
There's not a lot of people in Yemen.
But it literally, it's going to be the loss of life is going to be worse than Iraq War II. Iraq War.
It's not going to count stillbirths.
Oh,
it's
going to be very, very hard to actually count. But the amount it was the biggest cholera outbreak in modern history. It's bad. It's really, really bad. And for me, it's tough. So if you can go, in order to justify Obama, you can go, we got to do what we got to do. We got to go, okay, fine. This is a war Obama started. Mm-hmm. Go Google, placate the Saudis. I know everyone listening to this show already knows this shit. But this is a war Obama. So if you can justify that, fine. But just know, you've lost every ounce of credibility you have to be like, Donald Trump is deporting these people. He's separating families. Oh, I don't care about what you have to say anymore. You have no moral standing in this conversation if you could look the other way at what Obama did. If you didn't, you know, then I actually hear you on that stuff.
We have a hard out.
We do.
Okay, I was going to get into something that was just as long winded, but
well, if it's too long winded, we got to save it for next time.
All right. Well, we'll do this again at some point, I'm sure.
We sure will. It's always a pleasure to have you here, Chris. I love talking with you, man. All right, brother. Thanks for coming in. Thank you guys. Thank you guys all for listening. I am debating Nick Sarwak on September 10th, but you know what? I was just informed before the show that tickets have sold out. But I told you they were going to sell out for the last few episodes, so you blew it. I think there's still some like standby stuff you can do. I don't know. Go to thesohoforum.org, but that debate's coming up soon. And keep listening to the show. We'll be back on Friday. Peace. Thanks, buddy. No doubt. That was fucking time went by.
Yeah.